Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Good evening, Mr. Briggs. This is Anton Cardinal Vasek, who, despite being 80 years of age and physically infirm, is nonetheless the acknowledged leader of his country's freedom movement. The government towards whose overthrow Cardinal Vasek is working has arrested him, preparatory to a trial before a people's court, which is certain to convict him. He's being held for interrogation on the top floor of this building, Saravno Prison, which is located immediately adjacent to the city's main park. Saravno Prison is considered the most impregnable in Eastern Europe. No escape has ever been made from it. Mr. Briggs, your mission, should you decide to accept it, would be to rescue Cardinal Vasek. As always, should you or any of your IM force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. In any event, please dispose of this tape recording as directed.
It's 1966, and an elderly cardinal has been taken prisoner by an Eastern European country because the clergyman is the leader of the political opposition. He's being held in a prison where no escape has ever occurred. It's time to get back into Spyfy for the latest edition of Resonance Rewind.
Hello, Crystal.
Dan! Oh, no. No, no, absolutely not, no!
Crystal!
It's not fair. Don't even discuss it. I won't do it.
I haven't asked you to do anything yet.
But you're going to. I know it, and I know you. Look, it's been 2 years since I saw you last, and that was on business, and so was the time before that. So whatever it is, I won't do it.
Now,
look. Look, I have just signed the biggest contract of my career. Center Garden, top billing, my own package, complete creative control, and I'm not gonna give it up.
Crystal,
I don't want to hear it. I'm sure it's important. I'm sure it's very important. Desperately urgent. Stop.
Crystal, listen now.
Go away. I'm not interested in anything you have to say. It's just not fair.
Have you ever heard of Cardinal Vasek?
No. Yes.
And you know what that one old man means in that part of the world for his work? It's...
Please!
I need you, Crystal.
I don't care. I won't do it. And nothing you can say is going to help. I won't do it, and that's final.
You finished now?
Mm-hmm. Aren't you ever going to call me for personal reasons?
So is it true then, is the eyelash curler the most diabolical looking piece of equipment Barney Collier has ever seen? Well, it seems so. But it's a two-parter, the episode that we're looking at, and indeed this week's Resonance Rewind and next week's Resonance Rewind. But what about Cardinal Vasek? What about this old man out? Let's turn to Victoria Simmons, who's going to be first up to actually share her thoughts on this particular Desilu series from the 1960s, specifically 1966. Victoria, your first ever Mission Impossible TV episode, is it?
Actually, it's my first ever Mission Impossible full stop. I've never seen the films. I don't like Tom Cruise. But this, I loved this. This was amazingly fun.
Well, the good news, of course, is no Tom Cruise whatsoever in any of the 7 series, indeed 9 series, if you include the 2 made in Australia, but only one season with Stephen Hill as Dan Briggs, of course, as the leader of the Impossible Missions Force. He left after the first season, primarily, I believe, for religious reasons. He felt that as an Orthodox Jew, he couldn't actually film on a Saturday. So he stepped aside from the whole process. But many of the other crew obviously continued ever onwards. Martin Lando, of course, as Roland Hand. Cinnamon Carter portrayed by Barbara Bain. And, of course, Greg Morris as Barney Collier. Jessica Burtis, is this your first Mission Impossible TV episode? Or is it, like Victoria, the first Mission Impossible ever?
Yeah, I'm ashamed to say that I really thought that Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible series was the start of the Mission Impossible, like, whole thing. I thought he started it all. So it was very interesting when I was like, oh, Mission Impossible. I thought they just shared the same name. And then I heard the theme song and I was like, my world changed. So now my view is very different of everything. but it was really cool getting to hear the theme song and getting to hear in his mission debriefing where they were like, you know, the mission, should you choose to accept it? And those classic little bits, that was cool to hear. I really liked that.
Yeah, this is where it all originated. And with that, there's arguably no multi-billion dollar movie series which launched in the late 1990s and continues, of course, to the present day. Victoria, let's go back to your good self. You said you enjoyed it. What sort of things did you enjoy about Old Man Out?
The suspense in this one just... Well, I haven't watched too many of the 1960s style, but it just, I think, gave you a really good intensity. Especially being a two-parter, you definitely get at the end the increased intensity of wanting to go on to the next episode.
We have Marianne Mobley, of course, who plays Crystal Walker, clearly a former old flame of Dan Briggs, but they're never going to connect because this is clearly the business approach from that point of view. Jessica, how did you feel the narrative unfolded from the initial reveal of what the mission was and how obviously the somewhat frail Cardinal Vosek, who I believe was actually based on a real-life Hungarian Archbishop, and was obviously being threatened with death and execution, and the task for the IMF to effectively get him out alive.
I think that it's a very interesting mission because they have an inescapable prison. Then they have this team. I love whenever there's big teams of like different kinds of people and they all have to work together to pull off something. It has the highest stakes, it's life and death for this cardinal. So I think that it had all the makings of a really good plot, but then it's just made even more interesting and kooky, and the dynamics I feel like really get to be shown off because they have this circus as a diversion for the prison breakout. And I don't know, I personally find like circus settings, anytime there's a circus involved in something, it just makes it way more fun. I think there's a reason why we're drawn to carnivals and circuses and anything that's very bright and fun. And just, I don't know, it's the complete opposite to this very gray prison where they've been like kept this elderly frail man that they're going to execute. So I think that it's nice to see the contrast. But I think also the plot just, I think, went really well with how, like I was saying, you have the dynamic where they're all interacting with each other and the audience, and they're all playing different roles, like the strong man and then trapeze artist, clown, mind reader, all these different things that can kind of show them joking around together. And I think more than just like a spy would normally be behaving. I think that it can kind of show off other parts of the characters. And I don't know these characters very well because it's the first episode, but I thought this is a very fun way to have them introduced to me. I thought it was great.
It's fair to say that from a personal point of view, I often think that putting together a midweek drive team is a bit like the opening sequence of Mission Impossible, where we're actually selecting folk who will actually have the right chemistry and so on. But I love the line, "Where does any circus come from? Wherever it was yesterday," which is what, of course, Dan Briggs's character is saying when he's being questioned by the police chief, who's obviously fairly suspicious about this circus, which has just turned up in Serevno and happened to park itself in the corner of the park. Obviously, the response that it's because the trapeze artist doesn't have a safety net, so they didn't want to have any inclement weather conditions, as far as that's actually concerned. Victoria, as you said, clearly, I mean, were you aware, Jessica, that this was a separate aspect, well, separate but influential aspect, that this was basically what Tom Cruise effectively took his whole series from, and clearly. Took on board the character of Ethan Hunt, as opposed to Jim Phelps from that point of view, or indeed Dan Briggs. Or was it again a revelation to yourself?
Well, like Jessica said, as soon as you hear the music, you suddenly go, "Oh, that's what it is." But yeah, not seeing the Tom Cruise ones does sort of make it a little bit more difficult. But I do see it as a sort of mix between Ocean's 11 and Now You See Me. With especially with the carnival element, it's sort of diversion, the magical diversion that Now You See Me has, with everybody in Ocean's 11 having their different roles to play.
It's interesting you mentioned that because arguably, because this came first, maybe all three of those texts that you've just mentioned will have been influenced by the approach that Bruce Geller obviously put as the writer and creator of Mission Impossible, and of course directed this time by Charles Rondeau. Again, it's the caper movie, but obviously put in terms of a spy-fi narrative. Again, intriguing that this was actually a two-parter that was released overseas, or at least in Europe, at least as the Short Tail Spy in 1966. Not quite as much as The Man from U.N.C.L.E. had actually been released, but we're very much at the heart of the spy-fi genre here. James Bond's huge success, obviously feeding into The Man from U.N.C.L.E., feeding into I Spy, feeding into, of course, Mission Impossible, and so on. Jessica, as you said, the tech sort of developing set up fairly solidly. Pamela, who sadly can't actually join us for this, has actually said her favorite character was Cinnamon Carter. We won't talk favorite characters as yet, but any particular areas of the narrative for part one at least, because we did say we'd have a two-parter. Who knows? We might be expanded next week. For part one, that you kind of feel, yeah, that worked well.
Like I was saying, I think that the way that the, oh, excuse me, I didn't sleep well, not because of the show. The show was very exciting. I think that the way that the characters really interacted with each other and with the circus was the most entertaining part to me. I think that that part where they're learning their roles and Crystal is really trying to help them embody the different parts of the circus, convincing him to really act like he's struggling with lifting all those weights. I thought that that was really nice because it also showed how much they work together and how they really help one another. I think it also showed off little subtleties about their personalities. So I think that that was a really great way to characterize them without it being heavy-handed. And it made it very interesting, and visually, it was just fun to see all the different components of the circus coming together and how they were shown. So I think that that was probably one of my favorite parts. I think that was done very well. But I think also the pickpocketing scene, that was funny when he was just running down the garden after having pickpocketed somebody to get arrested on purpose to get into this, this prison. That's inescapable. I thought that that was really fun. It was a clever idea to get into the prison. I mean, he's lucky that they put him in that one instead of a different one. Kind of extreme for a pickpocketer. I don't know, very draconian. But who am I to judge? But yeah, I thought that those scenes were really good.
Victoria, favorite moments for yourself, given that that was the theme that you've gone down in history as saying for Residents Rewind, you actually provide the notion of the favorite moment of the show.
Favorite moment. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I was trying to think of this, but I quite like, it's not technically a moment, but it's the whole idea of the timing to the music and the scheduling to the music. And every time you sort of go, okay, so that I found myself going, okay, so he does this note, and that means that it's this time and that you should move to this place. That's, it's not quite a scene, but it's the storyline that I quite enjoyed.
Interesting. As a musician, you actually picked up on that because, again, I thought it was an intriguing use of when your watch and you have no means of actually acknowledging what the time is, because timing is so essential in this escape plot that clearly they needed to actually have a loud source of music. So, of course, they choose the calliope, which, even though we don't actually have any steam rising from the calliope, still is a wonderful aspect of the carnival and the circus and the Eastern European element as well. Minor aside, which I thought was quite interesting. Greg Morris, of course, playing Barney Collier, and he has white face as a clown. Any thoughts on that, or would you say, okay, maybe we wouldn't try that in the 2023s, but at a time, I mean, he does actually make a comment about whose idea was it to actually put me as a clown. Any thoughts, Jessica?
I mean, it'd be interesting to know what the response, the contemporary response was, and opinions around it, and what the actor thought. I think I'm trying to remember all of the different roles that they all had with.
Barney was pretty much the technical geek and wizard as the program proceeded. This is, I think, just the fourth episode of the first ever season. So in many ways, you're just beginning to be introduced to the characters. But the staple folk were basically, certainly for the first three seasons, Barney Collier, played by Greg Morris, Roll in Hand, played by Martin Landau, Cinnamon Carter as played by Barbara Bain, and of course the strong man who you've mentioned several times, but basically played Willie Lupus, who was also basically there to provide the muscle, quite literally Peter Lupus, who played Willie Armitage as the strong operator on that basis. And of course they would have other folk who they could actually call on, or in essence, fold into the mission. And this particular case was Marianne Mobley, who would also go on to appear in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. In the working pilot for the series The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., although she lost out to Stephanie Powers in the one season Girl from U.N.C.L.E., which of course was written by the late Arthur Weingarten in many cases, or had produced that. But yeah, I mean, a bit of a long-winded answer, but yes, that was primarily the core team of Dan Briggs, Cinnamon Carter, Barney Collier, Willie Armitage, and Roll in Hand, to which others would be added as and when developed. And of course, after Star Trek had finished, the team were joined by Leonard Nimoy as Paris, who actually replaced Martin Landau in the role.
I mean, I think they all work super. I think they're all super interesting characters. I think that they all wanted me to know more about them. I mean, you have to wonder what kind of people are elite enough to be put on this team. You know, what have they been doing to be put together like this? But I don't know. I'm actually really impartial to clowns. Like, I think clowns are such an interesting icon of carnivals and circuses. I think they're so cool. I actually used to have a big fear of clowns when I was younger, but I actually think they're the not, I don't know, I think the ones that look a bit more spooky are super interesting. Maybe it's just because I often see like carnivals and circuses in kind of more of like a Halloweeny spooky sense or something like this, that there's some dire circumstances. Like I'm reading Ray Bradbury with Something Wicked This Way Comes, and it's like a, I mentioned the calliope on the back. It's a wicked carnival that comes to town. But you know, the whole clown with like I don't know, it, I think it's a cool aesthetic. So I think that it was actually, I was really happy to see somebody was a kind of a clown that was kind of just like creeping around the back. So I thought that was actually really fun.
I mean, certainly, we thank you once again for the postcard from the Appalachian, the top of the Appalachians, which was Grandfather Mountain, which I'm holding up actually here, which you sent over recently. But I have to ask the question, given that you claim that you're not a member of the Impossible Missions Force, what were you doing at the highest point in the Appalachians?
I mean, that's classified, I guess. I can't give away too much, but you know, it's the highest bridge in the US. It's like the highest elevation, so it was an important job.
Well, we appreciate the contact, which made its way all the way across the Atlantic to my base in Teesside as well. So, Victoria, back to the show again. Anything else that you kind of had your attention drawn to? I mean, I will ask the question because some people actually can't resist the fact. We'll go straight into part two and see how it finishes. Did you actually effectively say no? I'll experience this in the same way as audiences first time round would have actually had to do, and wait at least 7 days before I see part two.
It won't be 7 days, but I'm definitely going to watch it because I want to know the system that will unfold because you've only got a few more hours before he's going to be killed. So what is going to happen now that he's not in that room, and how far is it? Will it stick with the timings?
The cliffhanger ending, of course, is a classic piece of drama. It's been used many a time. Did you feel it was used effectively here, Victoria?
In a way, but I have a feeling that it could have been done slightly differently.
I mean, again, clearly there are certain shows which are too big to contain within the 50-minute period of running time. And this, I think, you probably got a sense that it was going to open up into a sort of other aspect. What about yourself, Jessica? I mean, in an era where certainly presently you might say, well, it's just a two-parter. If they'd been doing this currently, they probably would have had an eight-part miniseries on Netflix about this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's very much a trend right now to separate things into two parts. So pretty used to having that cliffhanger and needing to watch the second part. But with this, I don't have any qualms about it because I do really like the setting and the characters.
Well, let's move on to the characters. Quite a large cast, of course, including Cyril Delevante as Anton Cardinal Vasek. And again, another little line which I thought was very nicely done and addressed the kind of religious element, which was, why should I believe you? He says, to which Roland Hahn says, faith, sir. To which the response is, how could a prince of the church argue with that? And I suppose you could also say that was a kind of reference to the work of basically Pope John Paul the second, basically, because obviously when he was Karol Wojtyla, the Cardinal of Poland, it's often said that he was working behind the scenes, although I don't think he was ever actually imprisoned. I might be wrong with respect to that. However, we've also got Joseph Ruskin as Colonel Scutari, the persona of, I suppose, the police state, quite literally. And inevitably, Monte Markham, who was making his debut, he would go on to appear in many, many series as a guest star, but as the prison guard, who obviously was keen to make an impression on both, possibly, of the women in the circus troupe as he sees them. From your own point of view, Victoria, who kind of gets your nod? Are there any particular honourable mentions? Or is it a case of, well, it all worked very well?
Favorite character would be Crystal Walker. I liked her. She was my favorite. Honorable mentions.
It's interesting you mentioned Crystal
I
Walker because initially I thought, what a cliched name, you know, surely like Tightrope
remember.
Walker, Crystal Walker, and so on. And then, of course, at the University of Lincoln, one of my colleagues for many years was indeed called Crystal Walker. She was one of my students and then became one of our tutors. So I never actually broke the news that I thought it couldn't be the same Tightrope Walker, but there we are. So clearly the name is actually out there. Anyway, that's a by the by.
Well, there are lots of people whose name suddenly goes very well with their occupation in real life. So that's not a problem. I did like how the cardinal was actually portrayed. I thought that piece of acting was very nicely done.
Okay, so Crystal Walker gets your vote. Jessica, what about your own honourable mentions and people that you're putting forward in terms of, yeah, this first ever TV episode, which led to all the rest, as we've said, that has opened up a revelation to yourself in terms of, so that's where they got all the ideas from.
I think it's hard because I really liked them all. I think that, Briggs was, I mean, he's compelling. He's your classic hero type. I think also Rollins was really funny with the whole like pickpocketing scene. I think and very self-assured. I think that the cardinal was also very sympathetic, not just because he's imprisoned as a revolutionary, but also just because he just seems so sweet, genuine. So I think that he was also a good character. I think Cinnamon though just seems so fun. I think she is probably my favorite, and I think also, like, I have to say the costuming in the episode, especially for Cinnamon and Crystal, was so good. And of course, Barnaby's clown costume, I loved it. I think that the costuming, the dresses, like, it just looked so good. I think one of the best parts of Resonance Rewind is seeing the fashion from these shows. I just love it. I should make some presentation at some point of, like, all the eras of fashion we've gone through in the shows, because there are some very excellent outfits in this. But I think Cinnamon in this, she was great. She was so, again, self-assured, the kind of confidence that you would expect from an agent. I think that she was great. Also, the name Cinnamon is just so fun. It's so, like, I don't know, only like a performer, like a circus performer or a spy, I feel like, would have those names. It's gotta go like one of two ways, and she was both, so I think it's great.
Interesting, the actress Barbara Bain and, of course, Martin Landau, who we have seen before, Jessica. You may recall they were also the stars of Space 1999, an adventure series where the moon was blown out of Earth's orbit under the auspices, obviously, of Gerry Anderson. But in terms of the again the connection, they've worked in the Method School of Acting, and I think both Landau and Bain had effectively connected there, and obviously would become to would. End up being an item in real life. Got to mention the music though, because most people are kind of familiar with the original Mission Impossible theme, of course, that's been put together. This time it's Walter Schaff. How did you feel it kind of worked from your own perspective, Victoria, when it comes to the music, as well as obviously the classic Mission Impossible Lalo Schifrin theme, which I think it's fair to say we can use the term or the word iconic to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like actually working it backwards, because you're watching something after you've already known the music from a modern perspective. So when you look back on it, you're almost looking at it with nostalgia, even though that came first, which is a weird way of looking at it. But if you're looking at it now, that's how you're going to see it. Then I think afterwards, the drama of all the music going through, really, it makes it so good and so dramatic.
Excuse me. The man robbed me. He took all my money. Thank you.
Hand him over to them at the prison.
Chief Keys.
Oh, can't I postpone or something? You see, I'm a rigger with the troupe performing in the park. I lose my job.
Quiet. Is that everything?
That's it.
Now the belt and shoelaces.
This way.
Through there.
What's that?
You have something metal on you.
What I have in my mind.
I see a field many years ago. Soldiers, a daring exploit. You're holding a medal.
Here it is, a pipe in a lining.
I'm sorry.
Pick up the shoes and the shirt.
Not a resort. Take him to his cell.
Curler.
That's the most diabolical looking piece of equipment I've ever seen.
Are you speaking professionally as an engineer?
No, I'm just a big eyelash man.
Prison guard evening shift just went on duty.
Go with luck.
I think I know why Dan cast you as a clown. It's the real you.
What I want to know is what comedian thought of this makeup.
What are you doing here?
I'm with the troop.
Eh? What do you do?
I read minds.
Oh, come on. I don't believe in that. It's some kind of a trick. Nobody can read minds.
No. Want me to tell you what you're thinking right now?
That doesn't take a mind reader.
No, it doesn't. But don't you wish you could read my mind?
Well, who knows? Maybe I can.
Who knows? Maybe you can, huh?
Okay, well, let's motor on then and turn back to Jessica. Pamela has actually sent in the line that, as far as this is concerned, although she's extremely hyper-busy at present and she wants to give her very best to both of you, but she's gone for a 9 for this particular aspect. Her favourite character was, as I mentioned, Barbara Bain as Cinnamon Carter. What about yourself, Jessica? What are you going to score this particular text?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go, I'm between an 8 and 8.5, so I think 8.25. I think I just really liked it. I love the carnival setting. The circus is great. I mean, excellent, excellent for that. I think also just that with a prison break from a very impenetrable prison to get a revolutionary card. There's so many elements happening in this episode, it's a lot, but somehow I think it all works together. And I think that's very impressive.
Fine margins, that's what it's all about. And if you wish to go down even further to from 8.25 or 8.27, etc., feel free to do so. I'm tending to hover around the 8. I don't think this was one of my favorite Mission Impossibles. I think there are a lot better ones that are actually down the line, but I do feel that, again, the series is finding its feet here. It's beginning to develop its roots, of course. And yes, I also feel it's a shame that Stephen Hill, in essence, left the series, because it would have been interesting to see how Dan Briggs continued to be portrayed and so on and so forth. I can also see certain elements where I think Tom Cruise might have actually based some of Ethan Hunt's views on the kind of impressions that that were being provided here by Stephen Hill. Victoria, what about yourself? What's your score going to be for part one? Because, of course, it could all change in part two. We've always got that notion. Sometimes the second part is an improvement. Sometimes it fits very well. Other times, maybe it's a bit of a letdown. Who knows what could happen with respect to that? But what's your score for this particular episode, Victoria?
I'm with Jessica, actually, on this, the 8, 8.5, because I feel like I want to give it the 8.5, because a lot of the time you're watching the film, but you find yourself also doing something else. Whereas with this film, I didn't actually find myself wanting to do something else. So on that, I kind of need to put it at the 8.5, but did it have quite enough in it for the 8.5? I'm not sure.
Again, fine margins. Speaking of fine margins, there is a fine piece of music that you're releasing. We're coming up very shortly to your latest single release. We're not going to feature it as yet on Resonance Rewind because it hasn't been released, clearly. But would you like to just tease ahead in terms of how people like Jessica and the listener can effectively do a pre-order on your upcoming track?
You can. You can pre-save it on my Facebook page, Victoria Simmons Music, and it'll just click on the button and you'll know all about it on the 17th of October. And if at any point we're doing a James Bond themed Resonance Rewind, you might want to listen to that.
Jessica, I have to also ask you, did your parents watch Mission Impossible? Were they familiar with it? Or was it equally a revelation to them in terms of, you mean there was a Mission Impossible before Tom Cruise?
Oh, no, they've known about this. I was never clued in. But these kinds of shows are also just my dad's, like, his favorite type. I think I mentioned he was a big $6 Million Man fan. He was watching it earlier this week, too. So he loves these kinds of shows. And I'm surprised I hadn't seen Mission Impossible on around the house. But maybe it will be now.
Well, there you are. You have been listening to part one of Resonance Rewind's take on Old Man Out. Needless to say, we're not going to leave the narrative just hanging there like some sort of trope on top of a trapeze artist left with no concluding aspect. We will be returning in the next edition of Mission of indeed Resonance Rewind to, you see, I was even getting confused about the actual title of the show there for a moment, because it sometimes is an impossible mission just to pull the thing together. But we will be back with part two of Old Man Out. Find out whether indeed Colonel Vasek does actually escape. And of course, will he still be in his underwear, or will there actually be other ways of actually coping with an escaped cardinal from an intensive high security prison in the Eastern Bloc back in the 1960s? All that and more from Victoria Simmons and for Jessica Burtis. And of course, we're going to have more music and clips from the actual program itself immediately after this. So we'll say those immediate words. Keep on resonating.
Thank you.
pitch for cash. I won't have time to pass the hat.
Thank you.